Hello and welcome to Tax Invoice, the ATO's official podcast. Here at the ATO, we want tax and super to be as easy to understand as possible. So we've invited industry experts to sit down with ATO's senior leaders and ask them the questions. We hope you enjoy this episode of Tax Invoice.
Hello, I'm Anthony Keane, personal finance writer for News Corp Australia, and I'm here with ATO Assistant Commissioner Adam Kendrick, who has responsibility around work-related expenses. Adam, there's been a lot of talk lately about the ATO focusing on work-related expenses, what people are claiming, and whether many claims are legitimate. The Tax Commissioner, Chris Jordan, has come out several times in the past year and indicated that there are concerns about overclaiming, particularly for clothing and laundry expenses, car expenses, and home office expenses. We're here today to talk about exactly what raises a red flag in the ATO's systems and what will happen if your tax return comes under scrutiny this year. But first, Adam, can you outline the scope and the scale of people claiming work-related deductions?
Yeah, sure, Anthony. Look, in 2016, we saw around 8.6 million taxpayers make over $22 billion in WRE claims. Now, that's at a cost to the budget of about $8 billion a year when you're factoring the marginal tax rates. Over the past 5 years, we've seen the value of WRE claims grow by approximately 20%. And while we know there are large percentages that are legitimate, we are seeing people make a lot of mistakes.
Look, some people have asked why the ATO hasn't done something earlier to address overclaiming of work-related expenses. Why is there this increased focus now?
Yeah, look, thanks, Anthony. Look, it's important to note we've always had a strong focus on incorrect claiming of work-related expenses, and simply just because of the scope and scale of it. You know, however, with the better use of data and technology over the last couple of years, we now have a better understanding of the risk and the behaviours across the population. This, coupled with our random inquiry programs, has allowed us to uncover the extent of the issues and pinpoint the areas that need greater attention, in particular work-related expenses. Like most revenue agencies, you know, we're not funded to treat every last risk in its entirety. You know, we aim to maintain the right balance across the system based on, you know, the best information available and our available resources.
Sure. And can you tell us a little bit more about the data models that you use and how they work?
Yeah, sure. Look, a couple of years ago, consistent with our goal to be a more data-driven organisation, we made an intentional investment in building our data and our analytical capability. In doing this, we brought in quite a number of new recruits, and we refer to them as our data doctors. Very clever people indeed. And what they've done, they've helped us develop some fairly sophisticated analytical models, including ones where we can identify taxpayers whose claims are outside what we would expect to be normal. And these models, which we refer to as our near neighbour models, they compare claims of a taxpayer to other taxpayers in similar circumstances, occupations and salary ranges, and that allows us to identify the outliers. You know, while they're not perfect, they are proving to be quite accurate in terms of identifying non-compliance, where we're finding that we're amending 7 out of every 10 returns that we audit.
Wow, look, 7 out of 10, that's a pretty high number. I love the term data doctors. Are there any specific things that they're sort of looking at? What are some of the specific measures that they might compare?
You know, we collect a lot of data and we have access to a lot of data. So what they've been able to do is to bring insights and develop techniques for us to actually use that data in smarter ways.
Sure. And the Commissioner has referred to something called the Random Inquiry Program in some of his speeches. Can you give us some details about how this Random Inquiry Program works and the sorts of things that you're discovering?
Yeah, sure. Look, in contrast to our nearest neighbour models, or near neighbour models, which identify the higher risk claimants, our Random Inquiry Program is just that. It's random. And that's important because a random inquiry program is international best practice in helping us to estimate the tax gap for large populations, particularly where you've got millions of taxpayers like ours. So by randomly selecting these taxpayers for review, the results are representative of what's happening across the broader population, and they've provided us with insights around the levels of compliance. Now, to date, we've undertaken around 1,000 of these random audits, and we're finding a lot of mistakes. To give an idea of the size of the problem, the Commission has publicly stated that we estimate the size of the gap for these labels alone is in the vicinity of or greater than the large corporate gap of $2.5 billion.
Well, yeah, you're talking a big number. And so what sort of specific things are you seeing in these random audits?
So look, I think a useful frame to start, you know, to answer this question is to talk about our three golden rules, you know, to follow when you're making a WRA claim. So you have to have spent the money yourself and you weren't reimbursed. The expense is directly related to earning your income, so it can't be private in nature, and you have to have a record to prove it. The things that are of most concern to us are taxpayers who claim things that they haven't paid for, claiming for things that aren't connected to their work, and claiming for private expenses. Like, private expenses are a big issue.
Yeah, and what kind of private expenses are people claiming? I mean, you'd think that most people would know that they shouldn't be doing this sort of thing.
Look, there are a few areas where we see mistakes being made for private expenses across the board and more than you'd expect. Like, we've got 3.75 million taxpayers claiming $8.4 billion in motor vehicle expenses. So here we see a lot of claims for just home to work travel.
Yeah.
We see claims for where people are transporting or claiming to transport their bulky tools to work. However, what we're finding is the employer either provides them or there's actually safe storage for them to be left at work. And we've got 6.3 million taxpayers who claim almost $2 billion in clothing expenses. You know, we see claims at this label for simply for the cost of purchasing or laundering plain clothing, such as your white shirt and your black pants. Now, these sort of things aren't deductible, even if your employer requires you to wear them. The sort of clothing that you can claim for, it's got to be distinctive in nature. It could have the company logo. It could be occupational specific, like a chef, for instance, or it can be related to protective gear. The other thing we see is most people have mobile phone and internet plans. You know, and while we accept there may be some costs that relate to your job, we often see claims that represent 100% of the costs. So we accept over the, you know, the past few years with the changes to the technology and the labour market, more employees have been exposed to new costs. So, you know, they've got to use their mobile phone, their computer. They've got multiple jobs, and also we've got a lot more people working from home. But what you do, you need to figure out what percentage of the use is work-related and then only claim a deduction for that portion of the bill. And lastly, we're starting to scrutinise more closely claims for overseas travel and CPD seminars and conferences. Now, you need to be careful here that the main purpose of these conferences are not recreational or entertainment. And if you combine your business with pleasure and you add a week or two at the end of the conference, you need to make sure you properly apportion your airfare and your accommodation.
Excellent. And I found it interesting that there's people claiming 100% of their mobile phone plan use. It seems a little far-fetched that we're not using the phone for anything but work-related use. And I imagine it varies between individuals, but is there sort of a guide as to how much people should generally be looking to claim for work plans and how much they need to report, how much records they need to show that?
Where taxpayers want to claim up to $50 for incidental use, you don't need to keep detailed records. However, if you want to claim more than that, then you need to keep a diary for a four-week representative period.
Excellent. And look, a diary is a good example of a record keeping. But when you look at record keeping and receipts, are you finding there's taxpayers who haven't been keeping the records that they need to?
We see a lot of instances, you know, where taxpayers are not keeping records or being able to explain to us how they've worked out their claims. You know, we see a lot of issues, particularly where there are record keeping exceptions. So in other words, you know, where there are simplified record keeping requirements to reduce compliance costs, people are claiming up to these amounts. Like, for example, we've got 1.75 million people claiming exactly $150 at the clothing label, which is the standard exception for laundry expenses. And we've got over 500,000 taxpayers claiming exactly $300 for general work-related expenses. Now, over the years, what we've seen is that these exceptions have now become the community standard almost, and, you know, and people forgetting about, you know, the three golden rules that, you know, you don't just get deductions, you've actually got to have spent the money.
And what about fraudulent claims, those people who deliberately do the wrong thing?
Yeah, look, unfortunately, we do see instances of fraudulent claims. However, they're relatively small across the broader population. Look, we've got numerous examples of where we see taxpayers manufacturing logbooks after the fact, you know, when it's clear that no travel has been undertaken. You know, and even in some instances, we verify the routes that have been declared by the taxpayer through by checking toll records.
Wow.
The other thing we see, we also see instances of taxpayer like forging letters from their employers, because that's a common practice for us. We actually will ask for a letter from your employer. And we do see that in some instances, these are forged in terms of, you know, what their circumstances are or the sort of costs that they have to incur as part of their employment. Another example around self-education, the taxpayer will provide a brochure of an overseas CPD session they've been to. When we actually check immigration records, you can see that the taxpayer wasn't out of the country at that point in time and they were there 2 weeks later. So in these sort of circumstances, there's a lot of data out there for us to actually verify claims.
So what are you doing about it and how are you dealing with taxpayers who make mistakes or don't understand what they need to do or those who make fraudulent claims?
We want people to claim what they're entitled to, no more, no less, and that's our starting point. You know, we take a prevention before correction approach. We want people to get their claims right. This year we expect to contact over 1 million taxpayers either directly or indirectly. Advice and guidance and tax time messaging is a key strategy for us. You know, this year we have up to 10 occupational posters available for our highest claiming occupations, such as teachers, nurses and tradespeople, to help get their claims right. We write to taxpayers with information where we have our concerns, and our other deduction mail out is an example of this. We also have nudge messages in MyTax for self-preparers, you know, that prompt you to actually review your claims if we think they're higher than what we would expect. And where these things don't work, that's where we try and take a firmer approach.
And what does this firmer approach look like? Yeah, are we talking about a tax audit?
Look, we are indeed, Anthony. And again, our starting point is we want taxpayers to claim what they're entitled to. So firstly, what we do is we try and make contact by phone or SMS to inform the taxpayer they've been selected for an audit and to explain our concerns. We then follow this up in writing and outline what we need from you to help us understand your circumstances, the basis for your claims, and that'll also include a request for your records and your receipts. If we still have concerns, we then might ask you provide a note from your employer. However, if that doesn't satisfy us, then we may contact the employer directly or even the bank to try and verify some of these claims. After we've reviewed all this information, at some point we'll make a decision and we'll ring the taxpayer to advise them of the outcome. If we found an error, then you will need to pay back any shortfall, and penalties will depend on your circumstances. Now, in some instances, we'll also seek prosecution in some of those other examples that I outlined in where there's fraud. Now, it's important to note for taxpayers, all our decisions are reviewable, so you can contact our review and dispute resolution area.
What about the many Australians who use tax agents and accountants? Are they safe? The tax commissioner recently indicated that even tax agents are getting it wrong.
Well, look, what I'd say, look, as a taxpayer, you're ultimately responsible for the accuracy of your own return. Now, if you use an agent, you should check with them that your claims are correct and complete. And the best way to do this is to show them the evidence of each claim. Everyone is entitled to a second opinion when finalising your return. However, we do see some taxpayers who engage in what we would call agent shopping. So they look for the agent that will give them the highest deduction. Now, we hear from agents that some of these taxpayers apply a lot of pressure to unduly inflate their claims on the basis that they'll take their business elsewhere. We ask taxpayers to be cautious here because our experience is if it's too good to be true, then it probably is. And look, the other thing is we monitor changes in the client basis of tax agents, particularly for those agents who we know take more aggressive positions, and particularly where claims increase significantly upon the change in the agent. So the message here is that it may increase your chance of receiving an audit if you do go to that agent who will give you a higher claim.
So do you have any advice that you can leave us with as to how we can get our claims right and avoid attention from the ATO?
As the Commissioner says, you don't just get deductions. You know, you have to meet these three golden rules. So you've got to have spent the money and you weren't reimbursed. The expense was directly related to earning your income and it's not private in nature. And you've got that record to prove it. Keeping good records is an insurance policy. Now, if you keep digital records, all the better if you can keep those. We encourage taxpayers to use our My Deductions function on the ATO app, and to keep your records and even photos of receipts. Also, another good rule of thumb is to ask yourself whether your employer would agree that you had to incur those expenses as part of earning your assessable income. Lastly, Anthony, I'd just like to mention that our efforts to improve compliance extend to all markets. It's not just individuals we're focusing on. We take a lot of care to balance our efforts across all markets because we know that individuals are more likely to pay their fair share of tax if they feel the wealthy, and particularly the large market, are doing the right thing.
Okay, Adam, thanks very much for chatting with us today. It was very informative.
Thanks very much for your time, Anthony. We really appreciate it.
No worries.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Connect with us on social media and tell us what you think. Download the transcript at ato.gov.au/podcasts.